Welcome to Micro Musketeer's Moment, a short podcast episode on health, wellness, and other topics from Wellness Musketeers. I'm your host, Aussie Mike James, a freelance writer and speaker with over 30 years of international experience managing leading corporate fitness centers in Australia and in Washington, D.C. with the World Bank Group. Our special guest today is our co-host and fellow musketeer, Dr. Richard Kennedy, MD. Dr. Kennedy is an internist who has over 36 years of clinical experience, including the World Bank Clinical Services and private practice. He is currently a primary care physician in Washington, D.C. with MedStar. Today, Dr. Kennedy is going to discuss something that's very important, prostate cancer screening. Welcome, Dr. Kennedy.
Thank you, Mike, fellow musketeer. Glad to talk about a very important topic.
And let's get right into it, Richard. And I'll call you Richard or Dr. Kennedy. We've known each other for such a long time.
Perfectly fine, Mike.
First question, what is the incidence of prostate cancer in the U.S. and the incidence of prostate cancer globally?
The incidence of prostate cancer in the United States, the last readings were from 2020. It was 111 cases per 100,000 population. And then if you look at it in 2023, there is an expectation it'll be about 288,300 cases of prostate cancer in the United States. And globally, worldwide, there were 1,414,000 cases of prostate cancer throughout the globe.
That's a high incidence. Richard, what factors are associated with an increase in prostate cancer?
The most important risk factors are advancing age, the black race, and family history. And what we see is that when they look across the globe, the cases of prostate cancer tend to be highest from 55 to 69. Okay. But of course, we see it in people much younger and more so as we get older and older. Now, the belief is that if we live long enough as men in the world, one out of 10 men will have prostate cancer diagnosed in their lifetime.
I guess increased in aging society, people living longer generally, is going to compound that factor.
Absolutely. And then the other similar risk factors that we've all talked about that are associated with other diseases, like obesity, diabetes, level of fitness, dietary patterns, meaning eating a diet higher in fat and red meat. All of those things are thought to increase the chance that prostate cancer may visit men. Okay. Now, that being said, most men who be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their lifetime will not die of the prostate cancer. And that has a lot to do with the fact that in the 1990s, they came up with the PSA test. It's called the prostate-specific antigen, or short for PSA. And that is a chemical that only is made in the prostate gland. And it will elevate when certain things happen. So you can have it elevated with infection. You could have it being elevated as the prostate gland itself gets bigger, and it can be elevated with cancer.
What is the measure there? Is there a range that we should be looking at?
Yes. The normal range for prostate cancer, or rather I should say for the PSA test, is 0 to 4. Anything under 4 is considered normal.
So over 4, and that goes up to ad infinitum, or does it have a ceiling?
Ad infinitum. The highest PSA test I've seen in practice has been 496.
Wow. So that's advanced. When should the PSA screening actually done?
There's a global debate about whether screening for prostate cancer decreases the death rate from prostate cancer. And so what has happened is, and we'll use the PSA test that started being used around the world in 1990. At that time, what we did is once we started doing PSA screenings, we started doing the screenings at the age of 50, because that was when the incidence of the prostate cancer seemed to be increasing globally. But what they also found out is that when you found an elevated PSA, so for instance, you can have a person who has a PSA of 3.2, which again, technically would be normal. But if this individual had a PSA test done the year prior or 2-3 years prior, and it was 1.1, then that was more than a 50% increase in the PSA. So there's a suggestion that there might be something going on. So you want to make sure that just because the test is normal doesn't necessarily mean it. You have to take in the factors, family history, because those who have a family history of a father, a brother, a son who had prostate cancer, there's a much greater risk that person will have prostate cancer during their lifetime.
So, Rich, you're having the PSA done. Say when you get to over 60, how often should you have it done? Is it an annual type of thing?
I think it depends on you and your doctor, because there are pros and cons to doing the test. So if you do the test and the test is elevated, it might suggest that you might have prostate cancer. And as I said earlier, the majority of men who get prostate cancer are not going to die from it. They're going to die from other things. It is only the aggressive forms of prostate cancer that are more likely to be associated with death. And so as an example, in the United States this coming year, 2023, belief is there's going to be close to 34,700 men who will die from prostate cancer. Whereas globally, that number will turn out to be about 375,000 who will die from prostate cancer globally.
Should you get a positive test and it's been confirmed, what treatment options are available if you do get diagnosed with prostate cancer?
So there are multiple treatment options. The first one, if it's a localized cancer, meaning the cancer is still within the prostate and the value is low, and there's a special test called the Gleason test, which measures, is a summation of the type of cancer cell and how much of the prostate is affected, will determine what the Gleason score is. And you'll have that discussion with the oncologist and or the urologist. But the one that has been recommended for a localized cancer, meaning that it is completely confined to the prostate, it has a low Gleason score, meaning less than 6, is what we call watchful waiting or active surveillance. Now, in Europe, that is more of an accepted practice than it is here in the U.S., although it's gaining teeth in the U.S. these days. These are all discussions you have with your doctor at the time of the diagnosis. The second option for a treatment would be surgery. The intention of surgery would mean to remove the entire prostate, the blood supply that goes to the prostate, but sparing the nerve. And then again, for patients who have localized disease, it's not spread. Then there's radiation. There's external radiation and internal radiation. External radiation is basically you go to see a radiation oncologist and they radiate the area where your prostate would sit. The internal radiation is where they literally move thing in place indirectly to where the cancer cells are in the prostate, have it go. And so that's one. Then there's radiopharmaceuticals, which is essentially radioisotopes. And this is for specifically castration-resistant prostate. And then there's hormone therapy, chemotherapy, and immunotherapy. Okay. All of these are different options. And the more extensive the disease, the greater the chance that you can't do watchful waiting and you can't do surgery. Now, all of those things, any surgery, any radiation, hormone therapy, chemotherapy, they all have side effects. And that is the reason why people are reluctant to always say everybody should get treated for prostate cancer, because the treatments are associated with side effects. The two most important ones being bladder continence, or where you lose control of your bladder, and sexual dysfunction, loss of erection.
Dr. K, with this prostate cancer, let me just backtrack a little bit. You mentioned that you have to confer with your doctor, and that's great. You have a good relationship with your doctor. But as I'm sure more than most people, there's a thing called Google these days, and people tend to look up Google and hear all manner of cures and so forth. Which, is there any site you would recommend for a more sober scientific analysis of the options with prostate cancer, whether it be the Mayo Clinic or whoever, anything you could recommend?
Yes. Most of the places, Mayo Clinic, NIH, the CDC, the American Cancer Society, the Johns Hopkins, any of the major cancer centers around, they're all available. They all use the same data, and pretty much across the globe, because everybody's comparing data and research and studies across the globe to get an idea of how best to look at this. And probably, and you bring up a good point about this discussion with provider and patient, is that this is a shared decision, but the final decision is always the patient.
And backtracking a little, maybe I should have asked this question at the start. And what actually does the prostate do? What is its function?
The question.
I bet you a lot of people don't really know.
So the prostate, its primary function is that it makes semen. And semen is part of the lubricant and nutrition for sperm cells, as we relate it to impregnation and pregnancy. So its job is really to provide an environment that the sperm cells can survive in while they're trying to make their way up in through the vagina, into the cervix, and into the womb to get pregnant. And so I would say the most important thing here is that the vaginal and the uterine environment is not conducive to sperm survival. In a way, that's why it takes one egg, but a couple of million sperm to create a fetus. And so that seminal fluid is what helps those things to survive.
So why is the prostate very susceptible to cancer, Dr. K?
I wouldn't say it's very susceptible to cancer. I'd say every cell in our body is susceptible to cancer. So you could say that about the lung. You can say that about the breast. You can say that about the skin. You can say that about the kidneys, the liver, et cetera. It's the second most common cancer in men. Number one happens to be skin cancer. And I'm a firm believer that all of us have cells that have the potential to become cancer. And there are multiple factors that will dictate whether that comes true or not, because we also have immune cells who spend their time trying to keep those cells from turning into the bad cells.
Another factor we talked about, and it's of particular interest to me, having managed fitness centers all my life, the importance of exercise and staying fit is a good deterrent, if that's the right word, for helping to prevent prostate cancer. Is there increasing research that's showing exercise and fitness is a big component?
Yes. Is all of these things reflected? So if you think about it, when we exercise and stay fit, and by default, if you exercise regularly and stay fit, you have to eat well. You can't eat poorly and stay fit. And so what does that do? It means that your body makes use of all of the nutrients that come in so that you get everything that you need to sustain normal cellular function. What exercise does is it keeps us from being obese. Obesity has been tied to cancers of all kinds, prostate as well. And so what they see is that there are people who stay fit are much less likely. Now, all of that goes out the window if your genetics play a role, meaning there's a family history. If you happen to be of African heritage, you're more likely for this to be an issue. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. And it's interesting, the U.S. Preventive Task Force back in 2012 recommended against prostate cancer screening because they didn't feel like doing it decreased the mortality or the incidence of prostate cancer. And interestingly, the European Union did the same thing. And then one of the things from 2013 to 2017, what they found was that when there was less PSA screening, and what happened is during that time period, the incidence of more advanced or aggressive cancers of the prostate started to increase. So now they backtracked a bit, and now that's why the option is having this discussion with your provider to determine whether checking for prostate cancer is reasonable.
We've covered a lot of areas there, Dr. Kate. In closing, what's your key message regarding prostate cancer screening? What would be your key message or key points, if you will?
I'd say one of the most important things is to get screened. Screening does save lives. And the dilemma here is we don't know if one person getting screened is going to have an aggressive or far advanced cancer, meaning outside of prostate or not, or they get screened. And this is one of the other important things about prostate cancer. For the most part, there aren't really any symptoms of prostate cancer until it's spread outside of the gland. A lot of men think, gee, as I get older, gee, it takes longer for me to urinate. It takes longer for me to, I get up in the middle of the night to pee a lot. And one of those things is that it's really important to be aware of that and to make sure that you at least get checked, because you can have an enlarged prostate and be giving you all of the symptoms and give you an elevated PSA and it not be prostate cancer, but it could be. And on a personal note, I'm one of those people. My dad had prostate cancer. And my dad got diagnosed with prostate cancer when he was 70. And it was because he had symptoms. He stopped being able to pee. Ended up in the emergency room because his bladder and kidneys were still making urine. And he couldn't get it out because the prostate had gotten so big, they'd squeeze the tubing. So that then meant that me and my brothers were all at risk for getting prostate cancer. And So far, two out of the three of us have had prostate cancer at much younger age. Mine was at 52. My brother's was at 57. And had no symptoms.
So you've got a personal knowledge of this more than most people. Look, that was a really educational session, Dr. K. Thank you very much for being our guest today. And again, the key message is get screened, huh? Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Terrific.
Absolutely.
Thank you again, Dr. K, for joining us today for this Wellness Musketeers moment. Tune in for upcoming episodes to gain the tools to improve your health, work performance, and live a more balanced quality of life. Please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, share this recording with everyone you know, and you can make a contribution through a link provided in our program notes to allow this podcast to grow. Please let us know what you need to learn to help you live your best life. Send your best questions and ideas for future episodes to davidmliss@gmail.com. Thank you again, Dr. Kennedy, and have a wonderful day.